Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, and welcome back, football. The Browns taking the field today at 4 o'clock for their conditioning test, the first day of training camp tomorrow. And joining us now in studio, we're very happy to have the voice of the Cleveland Browns from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, Jim Donovan. Jim, thanks for being with us.
It is good to be with you both. It's good to be here. It's always exciting. It is always exciting when training camp opens up.
It is. This time of year, so special. Yep. And you've seen more of these than certainly Matt and I with the Browns. Does this one feel different to you?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are excited. I think people around Cleveland are excited anyway. I think everything's
been a good year.
It's been a good year. I mean, everything's going well. Including the convention last week. I mean, I think everyone's kind of walking around a little bit taller and with a smile on their face and very confident. But I think when it comes to here, I think people hope that there's some overlap in the positive feeling that, hey, the Cavs did that and the Indians are doing it right now. If only the Browns could get it right. And maybe some of that will rub off on them. And I just hearken that I think everybody has to maybe take a couple of, maybe two Advil and a realism pill, that there's a lot of work to be done.
For
here.
Sure.
There's a lot
For
of work
sure.
to be done here. But I think you should really be excited about the coach and his staff. I think that he's got an exceptional staff. Obviously, that staff really felt comfortable in coming with him to this kind of a situation. And now you let it play out. I mean, here's a guy, I think Hugh Jackson, that a lot of people thought probably never should have lost the Raider job.
Right.
And had to go back a little bit and fight his way back up the ladder. And he certainly did that. And now he's there. And so now look out. Here we go.
Jim, at what point, as training camp starts tomorrow, at what point throughout training camp or the preseason do you personally start to set out an understanding of how good or essentially bad or mediocre this team can be and create realistic expectations for you as you go in to start calling these football games September 11th?
Yeah, I think that certainly when there's a little bit of contact finally, and it looks like they'll be in pads on Sunday now that they announced that today. And it's so suddenly, I think, when you start to see some contact, Matt, and you start to see them. But more or less, I think when you finally see them out on the field against another team and not themselves. So last year, when they went up to Rochester, I can remember telling you guys this a number of times. When they went up to Rochester, I just did not like the look of that up there.
Oh, no. That was a dose of reality.
That was a sobering moment.
And Andrew Gribble, he's like, either the Bills are going to win the Super Bowl or we're going to be really bad.
There was something wrong with that.
Yeah,
first
I mean, I that was kind of discouraging. And now that had come after they had played a game.
Right.
They had played one game, and then they went up there, and it did not look good. So I think once they really start to get into the games, I think, and then you start to see, you know, how they're going to look against another team, that's when I start to really formulate an opinion on who are going to be the go-to guys and who are going to be the guys that are going to win spots. And then it's always fun to see. There's always a flyer. There's always someone that comes out of the pack and really does some wonderful things in those three preseason games.
Josh Lenz.
Lenz-a-mania.
I mean, that's how Cribbs did it.
Yes.
I can remember that's how Cribbs did it when he came up and he just made incredible plays. And it started on special teams and it continued. And then suddenly he's on the team and then suddenly he's even
part
a big contributor.
Offense.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about, speaking of wide receivers like Lenz and Josh Cribbs, the reinstatement of Josh Gordon, obviously a big story for this team. What did you think when you heard he was back?
Well, I tell you what, I was amazed at how quickly once it happened. I mean, once he had the meeting with the commissioner, and then bang, he's reinstated, and now he's ready to go. I thought that surprised me because remember everything has been so slow, and I thought there was through one of his suspensions where, you know, I thought that the Browns were being held hostage a little bit by waiting to see his punishment was going to be at one time, and it was going to hurt them in what they needed to do in the draft. So he is, I think, he is one of the most enticing type of players that you'll ever see. And even today, and I was telling you this downstairs after while the press conference was going on, and question after question, a steady stream of them, all about Josh Gordon. But as that was going on, the NFL Network has video of him playing for the Browns, and he was just toying with defenses.
Yeah.
And that's the enticing part of him, is you just say, if he could get it right, wow, what a player this guy is.
He's the most talented guy on the roster, hands
absolutely.
down.
Absolutely.
Hands
absolutely.
Down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so week five, October 19th, you could potentially have the return of Josh Gordon and in a Browns uniform and the return
and
of Tom Brady
yeah.
after his four-game suspension. Just talk about, the spotlight for a franchise of who knows where we're going to be as a franchise going into that football game, but the intrigue that's going to be added nationally by having those two players and what they represent for each team.
Well, nationally, I think the story obviously will be Brady.
Yes.
Here in Cleveland, it will be Brady, Belichick, that whole gang coming here. And the last time they came here, the Browns spanked them. I mean, they really blew them out that day with Colt McCoy. That's the last time Brady got taken out of the game. Hoyer finished up the game as the Patriots quarterback. I think that game probably, and I'm only thinking a little bit on the television executive side here, I would think that game might get moved
flex to
a 4 p.m.,
a
4 o'clock game and become a national game. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The amazing thing on both sides will be, as you mentioned, where will the Browns be then?
Right.
But where will the Patriots be then?
Yeah.
I mean, where will they be? What will Garoppolo have done in his time as the Patriots starting quarterback, with that team?
Yeah.
I mean, what if he goes 4-0?
Tom Brady will still be.
Oh,
starter.
I know that, but I mean, what if he goes 4-0?
They'll probably feel much better about
of
the torch.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the whole Brady story with Bledsoe, wasn't it? Bledsoe got hurt, Brady went in, and Bledsoe never got it back.
The Wally Pipp, story of Wally Pipp.
There you go.
Yes.
I think it will be great. I think it will be a great theater, Matt. That's what we look for in our business in here. We look for great theater.
And you'll certainly get that Game 5, the Browns and the Patriots. Of course, you know that voice very well. Jim Donovan, our guest here on CBD at this time. Now, Matt and I were talking earlier about Josh Gordon coming back, and what does that mean for the wide receiver competition?
Yeah.
What does that mean for a guy like Terrell Pryor? What does that mean for the four rookies? Because when you look at it, Corey Coleman's going to make this football team.
Sure.
Josh Gordon, as long as Josh Gordon keeps himself out of trouble, Josh Gordon will be on this football team. Obviously not the first four games, won't count against 53, but are the four rookies safe now? I think it becomes a very interesting battle.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you pinpointed right. Gabriel, Hawkins, these kind of guys all have to be wondering about how that changes the whole scheme of the depth chart at the wide receiver spot. I would say rookies probably comfortable because they are the representative of this
future.
Yeah, and this new regime.
Yeah,
this is their new evaluation, which is another big story in camp, is to finally see these guys get out on the field. There's a high number of them.
Yep.
And second of all, they were the part of a new procedure, a new way of selecting players that this organization decided to go to, and now we're going to finally see them, and they're going to get a chance to see the fruits of what they pick. But it will be. I would be a little bit nervous if I'm a guy like Pryor, Gabriel, Hawkins, those kind of guys.
Well, if you got Gordon, let's go to Week 5. If you've got Gordon and you've got the four rookies,
right,
that leaves one. There's one other spot that's up for grabs between Gabriel, Hawkins, Pryor, Marlon Moore, and maybe the surprise Ronnell Hall, Darius Jennings, etc. There's really competing for one spot, maybe two.
What you could potentially do is, and I've talked about it before, but you pose the risk of someone being drawn off of your practice squad. Reduce maybe Ricardo Lewis, one of the rookies, or whatever rookie is lagging behind outside of Corey Coleman, Peyton, Higgins, or Lewis, drop them down to practice squad, for that weekend.
Right.
Essentially carry seven as you add Josh Gordon to the active roster.
Yeah, I would think that might be an avenue for them, but it really does change. It changes the whole dynamic of the offense, too.
I try not to think about it. I get so excited thinking about Gordon and Coleman and Barnage and Duke.
The only thing, Nathan, that pours a little bit of water on that was a couple of years ago when he did come back.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
After the 8-game suspension.
Right. When he did come back, and I remember he came back, and I remember Brian Hoyer admitting that, hey, listen, we all got intoxicated with the fact that he was back from the first practice to any game that he played in. And his first game back was Atlanta, and they won that game. But he said, all of a sudden I started pushing the ball, and I realized that after the fact, too much to him, and we got outside of what we had done to get us 6 wins going into that game against Atlanta. So I wonder about that, but the fact that he would be around a little bit more will be helpful.
I think it will be, and I think what will be demanded of him by Hugh Jackson and have the opportunity to work with Al Saunders, Bob Saunders, Chad Johnson, as opposed to the staff at the time, which was much less experienced, at the wide receiver position, I think will be a good thing for Josh Gordon. They're not going to tolerate him running the wrong route and having interceptions happen when he's not, when he's supposed to cut in front of the safety and he runs behind
him.
That's not going to happen.
I remember that's what happened.
Yeah, especially in Buffalo. I remember in the Buffalo game.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, but he is it's like the Adam and Eve story. I mean, there's that apple, and Josh Gordon represents that apple.
He's the forbidden fruit.
And you know that apple tastes very, very good.
Yes.
But do you take a bite out of it? You really, what an opportunity for him. What a, not a second chance, but like a third or a fourth chance. And it would be an amazing story. And I think that, you know, Hugh Jackson seems to, you know, open arms to a player like this, not just because of the physical skills, but I think he realizes the guy's got amazing talent, and what a sad story it would be if it's talent that gets kicked to the side of the road.
Absolutely.
Not because of football.
Absolutely. And one other thing that we talked about yesterday, and I don't know essentially what avenue it came through, but Ernest Biner, who has spent a lot of time out on the practice field this offseason and will come to camp, I believe, with the guys as they start tomorrow, made a comment about the production that Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell combined have the potential to create for the Cleveland Browns. And he put out a landmark, or a benchmark, I could say, of 2,500 total yards. Mm. And it took Andrew Gribble and I, you know, to step back in a break and actually do the math of what it meant.
Right.
So Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell last year combined for about 1,850 yards. So it would be an extra almost 750 yards of production. What would that mean to this offense, mean to RG3 and any of those young wide receivers, including Josh Gordon?
Yeah, absolutely. A ton. I mean, a ton. You're talking 700 yards, I mean, translates, I mean, into points, but more importantly, it translates into possession.
Yes.
Right? More possession.
Defense on the sideline.
Defense on the sideline, which this defense has lived on the field through so many years.
It'll be fun if it's a fun offense to watch.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, that's
it. I want to be fun to watch.
Yeah, when I was with you a couple of weeks ago, I remember saying to you, hey, listen, I just want
to see them go up and down the field.
When they get the ball, I want to see it, that it's fun. Not that we're waiting for Andy Lee, and God bless Andy Lee. He's great. But, I mean, you know, too many times we've rooted for, you know, the Zastadils, the Gardakis.
Dawson.
Phil Dawson was our offense.
I mean, I just would like it that it's fun when they get the ball, that we're going to do something with it and be aggressive. And I think that's the thing I always loved wherever Hugh Jackson has been. They go at it. I mean, they get the ball and they go, you know?
Yeah, and I think what makes us hungry for that is we see so many teams come in here and do that to us defensively. They define the game, and we're left reeling as a defense to try to match what they do or who they are offensively.
Absolutely.
And I think because of the mind of Hugh Jackson and now pieces falling into place as a part of his offense, we can do that to other teams.
And it's only going to happen if the quarterback play is at the level you need it to be at. The teams that come in here and have fun, they're fun to watch. The Arizona Cardinals last year, fun to watch. Carson Palmer led that charge. Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers, I mean, we don't
too
like the Steelers,
times, yeah,
but they are awful fun to watch
they
on
are
offense.
Fun to watch when they get rolling, yeah.
So it's going to come down to the quarterback. Now, he said he will name a starter before week one in the preseason. Who's that going to be in your mind?
Well, I would think it would be RG3. I mean, I think he's going to get every possible opportunity to do it. And I think that if he's in the right frame of mind, and I think he is, he should be. I mean, this is a clean slate here for him. I think that it's an important time in his career to kind of say, hey, listen, I wasn't just a great college quarterback and I had a marvelous rookie year, but and then fizzled after that. I mean, that's like a one-hit wonder. I think that it's wide open for him, I think. But I definitely think that the ship is being steered in his direction, that he would win it.
I agree with that. And you know, it's interesting because his road here is not the same as Josh Gordon's, in the sense that Josh Gordon's been suspended over and over. But we're talking about two guys who are now, you know, 26, immensely talented, who have, for a variety of reasons, not had the success that they probably think they should have in the NFL. They've got that Baylor connection. I wonder how that relationship is going to be. And these are two guys with a lot to prove, quite frankly, this year. Really, for both of them, for different reasons, obviously, it's now or never.
Yeah, when we do hear from Gordon, it will be interesting to hear, and of course it will be asked, how much he truly missed football. I mean, he's been away from football. I mean, you can train and do all of those things, but the actual part of the game, the football part, how much does he miss that? How much did he miss that?
Sure.
And how much did that drive him to get back and to finally get this thing corrected to the point where they gave him the nod to be reinstated? That's what I always want to find out, is how much did they miss the game?
And see, that's what, even me being out of the game, and I continue to say it when people ask you, well, what do you miss most?
Yeah, what do you miss?
I miss Sundays, you know, walking into either your home stadium in front of 75,000 people that want to see you succeed, or 75 people that want to rip your head off and are booing you. There's nothing like that. It essentially becomes your coliseum. And then beyond that, and I think what's going to be most refreshing for Josh Gordon, is the camaraderie of a locker room. And I think that's the one thing that I missed the most was stepping away from the game mm-hmm. as being one of 53 men, you know, with that common bond, mm-hmm. with a love for a game of football. And then eventually, like, the game kicks you out and it's just you by yourself, you and your girlfriend, you and your wife and your kids. Right. And you're like, whoa, where'd everybody go?
Where did everybody go?
And so the acceptance that he'll receive from his teammates, not because he's Josh Gordon, the football player, but the individual, I think will mentally put Josh Gordon in a better state of mind that he can buy into that culture, they buy into him, and as I continue to say, walk the straight and narrow, walk that tightrope towards getting back on that field October 9th.
Well, I certainly hope so, because I have to tell you, the talent is just unbelievably amazing.
Yes.
And when you watch him, he just toys with defenses.
He's a monster.
He just separates and he's gone. And it doesn't even look like he's going fast. I mean, he's like a racehorse coming down the stretch that just knows he's not going to get beaten. And as you said, he can flick off a safety or, you know, that time in New England when he just took him off like a mosquito.
What's intriguing to me, though, is you look at what an all-in Josh Gordon was in 2013 and what just being off a little bit and missing some of the game and maybe being mentally and physically off can look like in 2014 when he's not all mentally there. He's not putting forth the effort. I think Hugh Jackson and the staff, it's setting the table to get the best out of Josh Gordon again, both on and off the field.
Yeah, and the other thing, Matt, his teammates need to demand a lot from him, right? Don't you think? I mean,
he does not get a pass.
Yeah, and they spoke about that in the press conference today, and that is that that's their locker room, and he will be a part of it, but they have every right to demand of him that when he does go out on the field, that he is straight as far as knowing where he's supposed to be and how to do it.
Yes.
I mean, and how, you know, you just and that was very apparent when he came back the last time
right.
and wasn't all
that. And I made that point, I think it was whatever day it was that he got reinstated, Tuesday. I said, it's Josh Gordon needs to fit us.
Yeah,
we don't need to fit Josh Gordon.
Yeah, because remember, Nathan, when he did come back, I mean, we were counting the weeks. Remember now, in 2 weeks, Gordon will be back. I mean,
it'll all be different. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll all be different. And it was a little bit. I mean, you know, there were signs of it. I mean, that he was going to be the Josh Gordon of old, but it did not pan out. And it got worse.
Correct.
As those
Every
games.
Week.
I mean, to the point where he didn't, you know, even he wasn't around the last week.
No, you could tell. He came back. I remember he came back against Atlanta, 16 targets, 8 catches, 120 yards. He didn't score a single touchdown in those 5 games and ended up basically averaging about 5 catches a game, 60 yards a game, which was not what you wanted out of Josh Gordon. That first game at back was actually his best game, 120 yards.
But, and a lot of that was they would just give him the ball right off the line of scrimmage and he ran.
And I believe that this offense is going to utilize him the best way possible.
Right.
I think coming into a situation where you got that year, if you remember, and he was a great guy, Mike McDaniel was a great kid. He's still with Kyle down in Atlanta with Kyle Shanahan, but that was the first time he'd been a wide receiver coach in the NFL.
Right.
And all of a sudden you've got a guy who's coached, you know, Hall of Famers, Pro Bowlers,
yes.
who's been, you know, coaching longer than Josh Gordon's been alive.
Yeah.
And to have that combination with Hugh, who had been in a wide receiver room, was the wide receiver coach with the Bengals that had Chad Johnson, who was a little bit out there, Henry, who was troubled.
And they have Hushman
Zada.
And Hushman Zada,
three of them. And he got the best out of all three, and all three needed to be talked to in different
ways,
and he motivated them all.
Yeah.
He's coming into a good situation
Absolutely.
For himself.
Yeah, and that's the importance of a good staff. I mean, that really is. And that really impedes a young head coach for the first couple of years, I think, as much as the win-loss record, is the ability to have a good staff around him.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of times a first-year head coach going into his second year will make radical changes from year one to two in his staff and say, hey, listen, I got to fix this.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you have a veteran-laden team, you can have a younger coach because those guys already know how to be professionals. And look, every coach has to start somewhere, right? You can't just become
absolutely.
A 20-year coach without coaching for 20 years. You need that first job. But for a team as young as the Browns are and to get a guy like Josh Gordon, who we know has all the physical gifts in the world, to get him in here with this staff, I think, is going to be helpful. But they said the same thing that you say, I say, Matt says. At the end of the day, only Josh Gordon can keep Josh Gordon playing football.
I know.
That's it.
Yeah. It's just amazing to have that amount of talent and to flirt with it the way he has. And hopefully he realizes what he has almost lost and been able to get back, at least the chance to get it back.
Right. He's got the opportunity.
Yes.
And frankly, that's probably at this point all he could ask
for.
And now we'll get to see game 5. And hopefully, I think the thing that was the biggest when I was going through it, and then of course you find out he's suspended for the four games, and the Browns, it seemed today, certainly don't know why. They haven't communicated that with the NFL.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Which was interesting. But the fact that he's going to be allowed to be here, that he's going to be allowed to be in the meetings, not participate in practices, but be in the meetings and stay mentally sharp and immersed in this culture,
right,
I think is going to be very important.
Yeah, I think that it's important that he's around his teammates and his coaches, and he'll be allowed to be in meetings and things like that. I hope that he can get on the field and we see him in the not-too-distant future because of this quad injury.
It's important. Yeah. I think it's important for him.
Yeah,
he hasn't played football in a year. I mean, you know,
December 2014 was his last game.
Correct. Right. What's that like?
It's tough. And I think there's going to be a number of guys that may still go out today at 4 p.m., pass that conditioning test, and in the eyes of the coaches, seek that approval, which is really what it is, and also not be able to mask any small little twinges or tweaks that happened throughout their time away. But all those guys, or some of those guys, are going to be in football shape, but there's nothing like practicing and then playing in those games that allow you by September 11th for you to say, I'm in shape, ready to go.
Right.
Because a guy like Josh Gordon or Corey Coleman, if the wide receivers and cornerbacks need to be in the best shape on the football field. They need to be able to run those routes full speed because I've seen it on the football field, and you know just that voice that Al Saunders is going to demand that from them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting when you look at this team coming into this training camp, of the four people that play for this team that have been at least at one point in their career superstars in the National Football League, you've got Joe Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that doesn't fit what I'm about to say. You've got Joe Hayden,
right,
Robert Griffin III, and Josh Gordon. The latter three have as much to prove as anybody on this roster.
Yeah, I'm glad you include Hayden in that. I really
because,
am.
They all three of them have missed eight games or more over the last two seasons.
And haven't performed in their most recent go-arounds and not performed at the level that earned them the title superstar at one point.
That's right. And you know, you go back to Hayden's training camp last year, it was non-existent because he fell in line with all of those guys that
hamstrings
were hurt.
Hurt.
And then when he went out at the beginning of the year, right away, he's got Brandon Marshall going at him. He had Cooper going at him. He had all these receivers, and they went right at him. And they, you know, they're not going to say, well, you know, let's, you know, that's Joe Hayden over there.
Right.
I mean, they saw something and they went at it. I'm glad you included him because this is a big year for him.
Yeah, I mean, since he signed the contract, I don't think he has performed at the level that he would hold himself to. And that's one thing Hugh Jackson talked about. He's excited to get back here because I think he knows that. And I think when you have a team where the young guys who are coming in 14 draft picks, they know the name Joe Hayden. They know the name Josh Gordon, and I know they know the name RG3. So to see those guys who I expect to come in here and work hard, as hard if not harder than anybody because of what they have to prove, that should be a good message that should be able to trickle down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I hope so. I can't wait. It's football. It's happening.
Here we go.
Here we go. Jim, we will obviously be in touch with you all
right,
year
guys.
Long.
Good to be with you.
It's great
really
to
good
be
to
with
be
you.
With you.
Yes, first padded practice on Sunday. We'll all have our eyes focused on that. When we come back, part two of this press conference with the leaders of the football side, head coach Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown, Paul D. Podesta, when CBD returns. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily Football back in Berea, and the head honchos of the Cleveland Browns football organization, head coach Hugh Jackson, executive vice president of football operations, Sashi Brown, chief strategy officer, Paul D. Podesta, all at the podium. Here's part two of their press conference, the opening press conference, in my mind, of the 2016 football season from earlier today.
And I into the offseason about changing the expectations and the culture in this building. Where is that process at as you begin a training camp, and what's been the biggest thing you've done to help change that culture?
I think it's on its way. Do I think it's exactly where it needs to be? No, because that's going to really start to change when the W's go in a column. I think what I've done and tried to do along with Sashi and Paul is to really talk to our team about expecting to win. And if you expect to win, that means you're willing to do all the work that it takes to put yourself in position to win. And these men are really responsible for helping me along the process by acquiring good players and putting them on this team. I think obviously the draft was the start of it for us, and I think our offseason program was the other part of it. I think hiring Adam Beard in the weight room was a huge part of it. And I think the rest of our team that surrounds our football team is very important to this process too. So I feel very good about where we're headed. And I think our players understand that when you get out of the car and you walk in this building, it's all about work. It's nothing else. There's no egos. There's none of that. All we try to do is work every day and put our head down and become the best we can be. And then we'll let everything else fall where it's going to fall.
Should you expect another big suspension for Amonte? And will you keep him despite the or following the kind of legal resolution yesterday?
I don't know what to expect with Armani. I think the league's going to review it. I'm not sure of that, but we will be in touch with them when they engage. And I wish I had more for you, Scott. I just don't right now.
Are you planning? There's no plans to get rid of him here?
No, not at this point.
You know, what is the fallout of losing Desmond Bryant? And how well suited are you to move people around? Will you move people around? Can you fix that loss?
Right. We'll do whatever we have to do, to have a good defensive football team. And I think Ray Horton's committed to that. And I know Sasha and Paul are committed to helping us and Andrew Berry finding other players if need be. But I think we have some guys here on the roster that we're excited to see and see what they can do, for our football team. It's very unfortunate, that happened with Dez, because I think he was on his way to having a great season. He had a great offseason. And obviously that happened away from here, so it's tough. But at the same time, we know injuries are going to happen. It won't be the last injury we have. We'll knock on wood. Hopefully we don't have too many. And one thing I will preach to our football team, it's truly about the next man up. Who's ever the next guy, that's got to go. He's got to go get it done. And I know that's a kind of cliche term, but I think that's the way you have to approach this. And I think that's the way our football team will.
Kind of the finish line in his recovery, and what's your interactions been like with him as he gets closer?
Outstanding. He's chomping at the bit. We got to kind of put our arms around him and slow him down a little bit, because he's ready to get back out there, and he's close, very close. And I'm excited about getting him back out there with a football team and playing. But he's done an outstanding job of getting himself healthy, and I think we got a little ways to go. Yeah, but I think he's close, and I'm excited to watch him once he gets an opportunity to be back on the field.
Let's go back on Josh Gordon. It's a little bit unusual for a team to allow, for the NFL to allow a suspended player to be around you. Was that mandatory for you? Did you feel like he had to be within this support system if you were to take him back?
We didn't control the terms of his reinstatement. That's determined by the NFL. We could mandate it, we would have had that conversation. We do think it's healthier for Josh to be within a structure, and appreciated that facet of his terms of reinstatement, but we weren't able to dictate that to the league.
Did you request it, though? Advocate for that?
We did not. We had some conversations with them, very preliminary, about what might be helpful. We've had these conversations with them about Josh, but generally also about how the program works. I know they solicit information from time to time from teams and try to learn from their experiences too and improve upon the program. I think this will be an interesting opportunity for a team to show what a player back and within a structure can do, and we plan to support Josh the best we possibly can during his time.
Why exactly is he suspended for 4 more games?
I don't know that. I would let the league answer that. No.
The last time
about the quarterbacks. When you were with the Bengals, you had Andy Dalton. I assume that he took like 90% of the snaps during training camp, or even more than me. So does this battle, however you want to term it, is that going to slow the development of one of these guys when they're not going to get all the snaps that they would if you knew who the starter was?
Well, obviously you wish you just obviously knew, as you're alluding to, so that you can give the guy all the reps that he needs. But I think we're not at that point yet. I think there's still a little time as we go through the start of training camp before that decision has to be made. And again, I don't want to rush into anything until I feel like we're getting close to that point to have to do that. And I don't think we're at that point yet. But at some point in time, as I've said earlier, we'll make that decision and we'll move forward.
Do you start camp feeling good about the numbers you have at all the positions?
I do. I really do. I feel good about the numbers. I feel good about, our players, and I feel good about where we are.
For all you guys, is there a position battle or two that you're looking forward to seeing how it plays out? Maybe you're focused on receivers because you have so many young ones, or outside linebackers. Going into camp, is there a spot or two that you're really focused on?
I'm always eager to see the big guys up front. I think we've got some new faces along the offensive line, including a couple draft picks there. So I'm eager to see what happens there. I know that's going to be a big component of our offense, which is running the ball. So I'll be watching that closely.
Coach, will Ocho Cinco have a role?
Chad Johnson? His name is Chad.
Yeah, but I mean, on Twitter, I know he was making some mention of it. And then also Ernest Biner.
Chad is going to assist Al and Bob Saunders. And obviously, you guys know my relationship with Chad. And Chad wants to try his hand at coaching. And what better place to learn from Al Saunders? I mean, he's the best in the business. And so we've afforded him opportunity to be here and see if coaching is for him. And then Ernest was here with us in the spring and did a tremendous job. And so we've invited him back to be here for training camp and looking forward to working with Ernest. And I'm sure our players are too. So that'll be fun.
From what you learned about Corey Coleman in the spring, how much pressure can you put on him to be the number one receiver if that's what he has to be?
A lot. A lot. And that's why we drafted him. I mean, he's a tremendous football talent. And he's tough, you know, and I think he wants to be good. So, you know, I'm not. You know, they say pressure bust pipes, you know, that's what they say. I think Corey likes that. I think that's kind of the way he's built. You know, he wants to be the best. I mean, the first thing he said to me when I saw him is, Coach, I want to be the best receiver on this football team. And I truly believe that he's going to work to do that. I think he's in tip-top shape. I think he learned from the spring where he needed to be, and I think he's ready to go.
You mentioned the renovation, hiring Adam Beard, all of that. And that all three of you could weigh in on this. How much do you believe player development has been lacking in this organization kind of coming into this year, and how do you kind of expect to change that?
Well, yeah, I can't comment on what it was like before. Obviously, I wasn't here. I can just tell you from our standpoint, it's going to be really important going forward, you know. And I think we look at it maybe a little differently than other teams have looked at in the past. There are a lot of different elements that go into player development. I think we're going to look to really collaborate on all those different elements just to make sure that we're all on the same page. And I think it's really indicative of the way we work together in general. It's not just player development. It's even the way we approach the draft. You know, everybody from all these different areas sort of weighs in, and different people with different levels of expertise in different areas get a chance to weigh in to try to come up with, you know, the best possible answer in any particular situation. And I think player development is going to be one of those where we really draw upon all these different resources, whether it's Adam or whether it's, you know, the coaches, whether it's, you know, Joe Sheehan or sports psychology. I mean, whatever it might be, I think we're going to be incorporating all those different elements. And it will be an important part of what we do.
This is for all of you. What did the Cavs championship do in terms of showing you what the city can be like if you can be a winner, and what it did in terms of helping to build a championship-style team?
Yeah, I think I've talked about this previously, but when I came here, I came in part because of the fans. I know how great Cleveland fans are. I was really excited for the city, the community, and certainly all the sports fans here that have been through so much, as well documented recently. But it was exciting. It was exciting for us. Our players got into it. We all desperately want to win. You know, I'm not sure it ratchets up any pressure because we put so much pressure and we so desperately want to win on our own. But absolutely, I think the fans should have high expectations for us. Every time we go out, we have those same high expectations, regardless of whether the Cavs or Indians are doing great. And I think Chris and his team are doing an outstanding job as well. So hopefully they win another World Series and put some more pressure on us, if you want to think about it that way.
Did you guys get to the parade?
No, sir.
Did you try?
No. Did not.
Hey, did you notice a change in the mechanics of RG3 and or Cody Kessler? I think they both worked with Tom House. Have you noticed anything different yet, or have you not seen them?
Right, I haven't seen them yet. You know, we'll see them tomorrow out on the field. But I would think those guys are, you know, where they need to be. Obviously, spending time with Tom and Adam is a great bridge for them before we get ready to start training camp.
Just to clarify one thing, in terms of you identifying your starting quarterback, I didn't hear it right. You mentioned, like, before the games, or would you like it before the
Before the first preseason game?
Before that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. No, I will. They have to. You know, that's just the right thing to do.
So that's 2 weeks.
Right, so you guys will be sitting here 2 weeks from now, before then, saying, here we go.
This training camp, your first, what's the most important thing that you need to do to kind of be successful for the season?
I think what's most important, one, we need to remain healthy. But I think the biggest thing we need to do is become very efficient at blocking, tackling, and taking the ball away and protecting the ball. I think those four things, if we can accomplish that before we get ready to play Philadelphia, we'll be well on our way to where we need to be. Now, that's a lot of work. I said a lot of things right there. But I think our players are up to the challenge. I know our coaches are. And I think we're looking forward to grind of doing that.
You promised it would be a tough camp with a lot of hitting. Have you dialed back on any of that?
That hadn't changed. You know, it'd be fun. But yeah, it's the only way you get to play football. Huh?
How did your good friends in the sports science department feel about that? Is he sitting there? You were the one that said that they were kind of like, eh.
Yeah, but that was, you know, that was a conversation with them. But I think they get it. I mean, again, we all do this kind of together. And there's no question in my mind that they support exactly my feeling about what it is that we need to do. And obviously they've told me some things that we need to make sure we're mindful of, that I'm mindful of as well, which I totally accept. But at the end of the day, I think we all understand in order for us to become a good football team, that there's certain things that we must do well. And in this league, if you don't block or tackle extremely well, and if you don't affect the quarterback, and if you can't run the ball very well, then there's going to be some issues. So at the end of the day, I think all three of us and the rest of our organization are linked, and I'll keep saying it, to one thing, winning. Whatever we think it takes to win, that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you hit the ground full pads tomorrow?
No, sir, you can't do that. CBA won't let you do that.
Yeah. But as soon as we can.
Absolutely. Sunday. Yeah. Sunday, we will be in pads, I promise you.
Actually, there's a lot of guys on the roster who know Josh a lot better than you guys do, with all due respect. Were any of them involved in the meetings with him?
Not the meetings with him, but we did talk to our players, and one of the things that Hugh Paul and I believe in is making sure that we respect the players and that this is their locker room as well. And so we did take some input from some of the players who had been around when Josh was here. We're not going to go into the details of what those conversations were, but you know, I can at least say there was support. You know, one thing I would say about Josh, and I'm not trying to defend him, but he is, you know, at his core a good person. He's not, you know, as portrayed, you know, in the media. He's made a lot of bad decisions. He's accountable for that. But I think these guys know him at his core. And if he were different, I don't think they would welcome him back. But there was an openness to it, and he's going to have to prove himself, you know, that he can be relied upon as a teammate. But in earnest, I think these guys know that his spirit at least is in a place where that's a possibility with him.
You good?
Not Crowell.
Last one. Do you have some level of concern that all this stress just created by this whole controversy might affect him? And how do you help him work through that so he can overcome it and have the, you know, the kind of season that you thought he could before this all happened?
Right. There's no question it could. You know, that is a concern. But I think, I mean, I say again, these two gentlemen that I'm with and our organization and his teammates, we all truly believe what kind of man this young guy is. And we're going to help him as much as we can. And I think he understands the situation. I think he knows where he is and what he needs to do. And I think he knows that part of him being better is being around his teammates and being around us. And I think he's looking forward to being with those guys. But I think he's also looking forward to making this right so that he can put this behind him and move forward.
That's head coach Hugh Jackson wrapping it up there at the press conference before it all goes down today. Conditioning test at 4, first training camp practice tomorrow at 3 and 3:30. And then, of course, on Sunday, the first padded practice of the Hugh Jackson era here in Berea. We'll be back with our final thoughts on a very exciting Thursday here on CBD. All right, folks, that'll do it for us here today. A loaded show. Big thanks to Jim Donovan. Thanks to Brent Stelick. And, of course, Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown, and, of course, Paul D. Podesta. And we're ready. They're going to go out there. Conditioning test at 4 tonight at 7 o'clock, 1 hour. Myself, Matt Wilhelm, Andy Baskin, Hakeem Dermish, Sir Andrew Gribble.
Let's go.
An hour-long training camp preview.
Talking Shop, News Channel 5 again tonight at 7 again. Big thank you to the Real BV, Brian Vaughn, and, of course, George Erasmus from the Tribeca Oven. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. Football is here in Berea. I'm excited. For Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.